Blog Talk Radio.
It's Tuesday night, and you know what that means. Flat Track Weekly Radio is here, bringing you up-to-date news and insight you won't find anywhere else on the planet. Hosted by Grand National Racer Corey Texter and AMA Pro announcer Scotty Dubler, this show is guaranteed to pack some speed. So sit back and hold on tight. Flat Track Weekly Radio is on, and now here's C-Tex and Hollywood.
What's up, everyone? After a week off, we are back in action Tuesday night. Flat Track Weekly Radio, your boys, Corey and Scotty. What's going on, Scotty? How's your week? You ready for this weekend?
Man, so far so good. Yeah, it's already Tuesday, and I'm ready to get on the airplane and head off to Delaware. I guess you're ready, too. They're having a media day on Thursday. You said you're going to drive over and get a few laps in and get check out the place.
Yeah, I'm going to head over there Thursday, I suppose, and check out the track, you know, just get a good look at it. And I only live, you know, about 2 hours from the racetrack, so it's not too far. I guess consider a local race for me, and I don't have anything else to do on Thursday, so I made plans to head over there and, you know, get my gearing dialed in, scuff some tires in, check out the racetrack. They only give us 5 laps, but, you know, it's just a good chance for me to get over there and check the racetrack out and maybe talk to some, you know, it's a media day. I don't know what all that entitles. I haven't really been to a media day, but, you know, hopefully some local papers and magazine, you know, whatever, radio stations, and hopefully they come out and check us out or whoever's coming, and, you know, we can promote the sport a little bit, get some fans there and help the promoters out. You know, the promoters seem to be struggling this year here and there with some attendance. You know, Springfield, we had a really good attendance, it looked like, but the other races, you know, the live attendance seems to be down a little bit. So hopefully I can help out the promoter at Delaware and pump up the race a little bit, get some fans in. So, yeah, I'm stoked, man. As my hat reads, I'm stoked, you know. I got a hat. It says stoked on it. Chris Hawkins, the guy, helps me out at the last two races. I guess on the podium when I won my semi at Charlotte, the first thing I said was I'm stoked. And he thought it'd be funny to get me this hat. So I've been rocking it. But no, Tuesday night, I'm excited. We got a great show coming up for you. Bronson Bauman, one of the most entertaining guys in the paddock. He'll be on a little bit here to talk a little bit about his season, his big win at Charlotte, the struggles he had at Springfield with the bike breaking and stuff like that. So I'm excited to have Bronson on the show in a little bit. You guys will be entertained. I promise you that. He texted me a little bit ago, and he asked me who else is going to be on the show with him. I'm like, just you, buddy. He's like, you guys usually have 2 or 3 people. And only I was like, yeah, but you're entertaining enough. We don't need anybody else. You're the lone survivor on this show tonight. And he said he's excited. So that's going to be good. I want to thank our sponsors, Tommy Duma, Fine Jewelers, PDFJ.com, Evans Coolin, Light Shoe, and Design Star 3. Without these guys or those guys, we wouldn't be here. So make sure you check out their websites. Drop them a note. Tell them you appreciate their support of our show. Scotty, what do you want to talk about, man? I guess we could review Springfield. We didn't really get to talk about that too much. We didn't have a show last week. So what are your overall thoughts on the Springfield Mile?
Well, Springfield Mile was good. I thought, you know, it started off rocky with Johnny Lewis going near the air fence at about 110 miles an hour and put us behind the eight ball a little bit as far as our show was concerned. We had actually pre-taped a pre-show. And then we're going to change things up on FansChoice.tv, and we didn't get to run that at the exact time we wanted to. So that put us behind the eight ball a little bit, but the track, it looked great from my point of view, and when I walked out there on it, it looked pretty good. All in all, I think it was a great day. You know, for the first time ever, we had a husband and wife, a brother and sister, and two females all in one main event. I don't think there's any other sport in the world that's ever happened to. So I thought that kind of just was like the icing on the cake to top off the Springfield Mile weekend.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. I thought it'd be. I've been saying it would be cool to have two ladies in a final, since Shayna moved up to the expert ranks last season. And every time Shayna would make one, Nicole would have issues. Every time Nicole would make one, Shayna would have issues. And Shayna's been really struggling this year trying to get her new bike dialed in. And it was just a matter of time before she got her program together. And sure enough, it somewhat happened to Charlotte. You know, she came really close to making it. She rode awesome. And I was telling people I'd be really shocked if she didn't make the main event at Springfield. And she got the job done. It didn't even sink in that two ladies made the main event until right before the final. I was, you know, we were putting our helmets on, and I think you announced it. I was like, oh, yeah, cool. And it was time to go racing. So it was a good event. You know, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, there was a lot of spectators there. It was the most packed I've seen the grandstands in a few years. I mean, I don't know the numbers, but it looked packed, and that was awesome to see. That put a smile on my face. The track was really fast, too. It was the fastest track. Fastest mile or Springfield mile that I've raced on in a couple years, at least that I remember. It was a really fast, tacky groove, and I think the weather had a lot to do with it. It was 97 degrees, 100 plus with heat index, and the track was really, really fast. And you know, tire wear was a huge factor on the day, and I experienced that firsthand. I mean, I'll touch upon that a little bit later, but you know, great day, man. Talk about the main event from your eyes, both main events, GNC1 and GNC2.
Let's see, the GNC1, you know, it was a really good race, and I thought, you know, for a long time there was about seven bikes up there battling for the lead, but nobody seemed like they could pull away from anybody else, which that's, you know, classic old-style Springfield mile. You know, back in the day, I remember, you know, Scotty Parker and Chris Carr and Ricky Graham and some of those folks would wait, you know, 5, 7, even 10 laps and just hang around mid-pack. And then, you know, about halfway flags or maybe a little before they start making their way to the front. So I think we all knew that there was going to be some tire wear because of the temperatures and because the track was real abrasive and had a lot of rubber on it. So I think a few people sat back for just a little bit, but, you know, we had about 6 riders battling for the lead for quite a while. That's where the camera stayed focused on. So I didn't get to see what was going on, you know, mid-pack or even back in the pack, but everything looked, you know, really good. It looked like a lot of fun. I don't know. I was surprised. I thought Jake Johnson did the right thing going into turn number 3 on the last lap. I thought he had everything set up just like Cool Beth did in the May race. And then all of a sudden, Ryan Smith catches a little bit of the draft and goes flying by way around the outside. And I thought Jake had it dialed in. And you know, they went across the line pretty much 3 wide with Brian, Jake and Jared, and man, what a finish it was. You know, I really thought Jake had made the right move, and I thought he was going to take the victory, but, you know, Brian Smith prevailed again, winning his 5th national of the season. So that Kawasaki and that team, and, you know, Brian Smith's one hell of a rider. So they've got everything figured out right now, and now he's only 1 point behind Jared in the championship. So it's coming down to the last few rounds, and it's going to be exciting.
Well, you mentioned the Cool Beth move. You said early on this season in May, it was actually last year,
last fall, correctly. Yeah.
Brian, I think he swept both the Springfield miles this year. Yeah. I think it's the first time he's done that in a couple of years, if I can remember. But, it was – I mean, I didn't get to see all that because I was in the race. But, you know, from my perspective, you know, the race – it's one of the longer races on the schedule, but it seems to go by really fast. You know, the first couple laps, everyone's kind of settling in. It's kind of sketchy. You know, everyone's, you know, doing things they shouldn't be doing because they're hyped up. They see the green, you know, the green light, and they just start racing. And you know, it's a long race. It's a chess match, and there's a couple guys out there that just push the issue too much in the first couple laps. I mean, I guess you don't want to lose sight of the leaders, but it's intriguing to me that, you know, Jared and Brian, their fastest lap times were only a 10th faster than my fastest lap time, and I finished 11th. So all the lap times are really similar. It's just a matter of, you know, staying it with the lead draft and you know, positioning yourself for that last lap, you know, heroic effort that you need to do to score a good finish. But, yeah, the tire wear was pretty crazy. I mean, I haven't had issues with tires hardly ever in my career, and I had issues at Springfield. I won't go into full detail on what I learned and how it all shook out, but I burnt my tire off. I guess with 7 laps to go, the lugs ripped right off my tire, and I went into turn 1 and I just blew the groove. It just blew right off the groove, and I didn't go in any harder. I mean, I'm not a guy that kind of just blow the groove randomly. And then I went into turn three, and I blew it again. And then I was like, oh man, I need to like settle in. I guess my tire's shot. So kind of had to adjust the way I was riding. And I got in, you know, I chased back down a group of riders that had passed me when I blew the groove. Shayna was one of them, and got into kind of a drafting battle with Shayna. You know, I couldn't really draft her that well, but I was staying with her, and I knew I could pass her on the outside of turn one, just one time though. So I waited two laps to go, passed her on the outside of turn one, and it was good. I went into turn three and I blew the groove again. So came in and the lugs were ripped right out of my tire, and yeah, I don't know. It's just something that hasn't happened before. So I, you know, Dunlop, I talked to them after the race. They're gonna figure it out. You know, it's one of those deals where it kind of sucks. You know, it's a new tire, and typically it's worked well at all these races, and you know, everyone seems to be happy with it. But you know, there was issues that came up at Springfield, and a lot of that, like you said, was, you know, it was hot. It was 97 degrees, and yeah, I mean, that's stuff you got to watch for. But it was something I wasn't used to, Scotty.
Yeah, can I ask you a question?
You just did.
What was the air pressure run in the rear tire?
it wasn't low, I'll tell you that much. It was above 25 psi,
okay.
In between 25 and 30. So it's the higher end of 25 to 30. I mean, it was higher than, you know, it was high because
it was high enough, so it shouldn't have done that. So yeah, it's a new ball game.
Yeah, I think, you know, after talking with the Dunlop guy, you know, he said, I kind of explained to him I was on a 700 cc and, you know, the rest of the guys were on 750s. I didn't have a lot of coast speed throughout the race. You know, a lot of guys, they go in, they roll off the gas, they cruise a little bit to the apex, and they roll the throttle back on. You know, I couldn't do that. I had to keep the throttle pretty much pinned the whole time, because I felt like I was down on power, and the only way I could keep up with the riders ahead of me was to hold it on longer and get on the gas sooner, and that basically meant not shutting off at the Springfield Mile. So I think, you know, the tire being under that much load, you know, just constantly pinned, spinning on the gas, I think that had a lot to do with why the lugs might have ripped off around lap 17. So I looked at my lap times, and lap 17, I did a lap that was 3 seconds slower than what I was consistently running before that. And it was a bummer. You know, I was battling with Stevie Bonzi, and end of the race, he finished seventh. And so that was kind of a bummer. I would have liked to have seventh, eighth would have been awesome, you know, especially brand new bike. You know, it's a 700cc. I know for a fact we were the only 700cc in the main event. And, you know, 11th place, it's nothing to be too bummed out about this early on in the life of the Black Hammer, but I would have definitely would have took a 7th or 8th. But overall, it was a good day for me. I learned a lot, and that's what kind of finishing out the year is for me, is just every race I get out there, every lap I do, I just trying to learn as much as I can about the new motorcycle, set ourselves up for next year, take baby steps, and if we can get some good results out of it, then that's a bonus. So, yeah, it was it was a good race for sure.
Gotcha. The only I guess real surprise, I guess I was a little surprised that Zach Palmer was in the main 81C. You know, he's ran very well there on a 450. I just didn't think he would pick up and run that good on a twin in the GNC1 class. So I was a little surprised by him making the main event. Nicole Meese looked very strong. She was riding William McCoy's bike, and I guess she got into the back straightaway wall and skid off a bunch of her boot, and then she also, I guess, did, you know, ground off her foot peg quite a bit and stuff like that. So it was a tough break for Nicole, who ended up finishing, you know, near the back at about 16th spot. So tough break for her. Let's see, what else? Another surprise, Don Taylor. I hadn't seen him racing all season. And he showed up and actually raced Charlotte, and then he finished in the 12th spot. And 12th spot for Don Taylor is pretty impressive on that KTM. So good to see him back on the circuit. Like I said, he raced Charlotte, and they came back and finished 12th there at Springfield.
Yeah, no, a lot of different brands out there, you know, at the Springfield Mile, the Triumph, you know, Brandon Robinson, he was running strong. couple of KTMs in the main event, Jeremy Higgins, Don Taylor, like you just mentioned, and Harleys, Kawasaki's, you know, there was, I don't know if I'm missing any there, Scotty, but yeah, it was, you know, it was crazy. And you mentioned about Zach Palmer being a surprise, and, you know, he, for him to take that bike and, you know, first time out, make the main event at Springfield, that's awesome. You know, that was great. I'm not too surprised. I mean, he's a really good big track rider. And, you know, there was a lot of guys who were kind of off their game, and it opened up the doors for some new blood to get in there. You know, Henry Wiles didn't make the main event. Jeffrey Carver didn't make the main event. Then you had, you know, Johnny Lewis going down and not racing. Briar Bauman not racing, going down. So you had four guys there who typically are in the main event who weren't in the main event. So that opened up the doors for a few other riders to get in there. And, yeah, those semis at Springfield, those expert semis, they are gut, you know, they're cutthroat. You know, they're tough. No matter who you are, you know, last year, Brad Baker, the factory Harley rider, he was in a semi and he had his hands full. You know, it's very uncommon. You get out in a semi and you comfortably check out and don't have any issues. You know, Coolbeth kind of did in the one semi this past weekend, but it's very uncommon. You see that those semis, you know, it's a huge drafting war and everyone is going for it. They want to get in that 25 lap main event. So, but no, it was, Springfield was great. We talked a lot about the GNC one class, the GNC two class. I didn't get to watch it, Scotty, because I was getting ready for my main event, but Davis Fisher took the win, I saw, and Tristan Avery was second and Ryan Wells was third. Not too surprised by the results there. Ryan Wells was on a really fast 1,000, so I thought he was actually going to maybe pull off that win. I'm not sure what the horsepower numbers are on those bikes, but I think they're quite a bit more than the Kawasaki's. But Davis and Tristan both have really, really fast 750s. And, I wasn't too surprised by that. I was cheering for Bronson. You know, he's coming on the show in a little bit, mainly just because he was on a Harley and kind of the underdog a little bit in that lead draft. And I was, you know, he looked great until his Harley went sour. And we'll find out more about what happened when we bring him on the show. But he was also involved in the lead draft until he had a mechanical. But you got a better view of the race than I did. So let's talk about the GNC 2 class.
Well, it started, what scared me first was the very first heat race when Davis Fisher had problems coming off of turn number two, threw his hand up, and then he immediately went straight left, which I was like, oh, no, and he did that right in front of Tristan. Tristan hit the back of him and got all kinds of a head shake and a big wobble all the way down the back straightaway, and somehow they both did not go down. And then they red flagged the race, came back and still finished first and second in every race of the day. So those two definitely had what it take to run up front. But Bronson was up there until he had a motor problem, but it was definitely, you know, you could definitely tell that Davis Fisher and Tristan were a lot faster than anybody else. Thinking back a little bit deeper in the pack, there was a lot of good racing all the way around, you know, around the racetrack, and there was no real big surprises there. I guess, you know, like you said, Wells was fast on his Suzuki, and he just, I don't know if he just wasn't getting the starts and couldn't keep up with them, or if he was getting wheel thin and just couldn't keep up with the lead draft, but he was coming. You know, I don't know if how many more laps would have taken him to catch up to the leaders or if he could have, but still a good solid third place finish for him. And then Jared Addison was fourth, and Ben Lau, I think that was a really good solid finish for him, and a fifth place finish at the mile. So that's an exciting class, and you know, it's that points battle is pretty much non-existent right now. It's pretty much all Davis Fisher. I think pretty much he just has to start the next few races and he's going to lock it up. You know, there's only three rounds left, and the GNC one points is really, really tight between Jared and Brian, of course. But I'm just ready to get back to the racetrack. It seems like we've been off for a little while, and I don't know. It's just I went up to Kansas City and hung out with Bubba Blackwell at the Harley-Davidson plant up there and did some stunt shows, and I just kind of helped out with him and stuff. But I'm ready to go flat tracking again.
Yeah, I hear you. I was, you know, it's been, you know, only a week, but I was off for so long, and then without a ride, and then we had back-to-back weekends, and then this past weekend I didn't know what to do with myself. I wanted to race, so I just went out on the bicycle and did some training, did stuff like that. I'm actually doing a duathlon on Sunday, the day after the Delaware race. I'm gonna leave the Delaware National and then head about 45 minutes to Bethany Beach. There's a duathlon there, a big one on Sunday, and I'm gonna head over and do that. It's I gotta be up at 5:30 a.m. on Sunday to do the duathlon, but I'm stoked, man. It's gonna be a really busy weekend for me.
I gotta be up that early, but that's just so I can get to the airport on time. So yeah, I don't know how you're gonna do that. So hopefully you can get a good night's sleep after you win Saturday night. You can go get some sleep. If you win the race, you're probably just gonna have to stay up all night though.
Yeah, no. If I would win my first national at Delaware, I would definitely stay up all night. And I'm not sure if I'd even go to the duathlon. You know, I pre-entered, and it's quite a bit of money to pre-enter, but whatever, man. I don't think I'd care too much. but yeah, no, Jess is actually on the line right now. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll have Bronson Bauman on the line.
Light Shoe, the number one maker of steel shoes for dirt track racers. Light Shoes come with a one-year guarantee on light shoe material and craftsmanship. Light Shoes are worn by the pros like Mark Marquez, Sammy Halbert, Wyatt McGuire, Jeffrey Carver, and former Grand National Champion Brad the Bullet Baker. Light Shoes can be purchased separately or as a boot and steel shoe combination. Light Shoe also carries hot shoe straps, t-shirts, and hoodies. For more information, check out lightshoe.com. Light Shoe for the racer's heart and soul.
Our next guest is on the line. As I said earlier, he's kind of on a hot streak. You know, he had some bad luck at Springfield, but he pulled off his first win at Charlotte, and he was running strong at Springfield until he had some engine problems. So we'll bring him on right now and talk to him about it. Bronson, how are you?
I'm doing good, Corey. How about yourself?
We're doing well, man. What are you up to on this fine Tuesday evening?
You know, working on Harleys and just living the life of a dirt tracker, trying to get as much money together as possible.
Well, that sounds like a plan to me. But so you go from hero 1 week to zero the next week, figuratively. You actually won your first race in Charlotte and finished at 18th there at Springfield. So let's go back a week and let's talk about Charlotte. How cool was it to win your very first national?
It was really awesome, Scotty. I mean, been working at it for quite some time, and honestly, if I didn't have any bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. So some bad luck went away and got some good luck and just ran solid laps and brought home my first win. So that's definitely an awesome experience.
At what point throughout the day at Charlotte did you actually, you know, I mean, I know you got every race to win, but what point did it actually sink in? Like, you know, this is the night I'm going to get my first win. Were you confident all day? Did, you know, just everything come together for the main event? Talk a little bit, you know, a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, when I realized I was going to win my first national, it was actually when I crossed the checkered flag in the main event after the 16 laps. So that was kind of when I was like, all right, I'm going to win it. But besides that, throughout the day, we qualified decent. Lombardi's XR Harley Davidson was working awesome all day, so it was really cool about that aspect. And we won our heat race, which was awesome, and you know, just felt fairly confident all day. I knew Davis Fisher and Ryan Wells were going good. Andrew Luker got out in a good jump in the main event, so I figured it was going to be a tough race. I mean, it always is, but just did the best I could and rode as hard as I could every lap, and finally got it done.
Well, I looked, you know, the AMA is, they're sending out these technical logs, and I saw at the bottom of it that you actually were protested by the 67M, something to do with starting procedure, and I didn't know anything even happened. I'm kind of curious, and I know some of the fans are that have seen that. What was the protest for, and can you give us your point of view from it?
Oh, yeah, it was about my restart when we're staggered, I'm sorry. And they said I jumped it, and they're, I guess, protesting the AMA for not calling a red flag and sending me to the back. But, you know, honestly, everyone just got whiskey throttled like it was amateur hour, and for once I got a good start in my life and jumped way up front, and I got into, I believe it was second place right off the start, second or third, and they were kind of sour about it, I guess, because I finally got a good start and they wanted to protest it.
So you were behind behind Davis when that actually happened, and then you end up in front of him going into the first corner? Is that what the problem was?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, I was in sixth on the staggered restart, and once again, the Lombardi's Harley-Davidson bike was working awesome. I got a good jump finally and went straight up to the groove while everyone was sitting there spinning donuts, basically roasting tires. And I went up to the groove and just ran her in there like Atherton would and said, "Let's get her done, boys."
Yeah, it was exciting, man. It's cool to see anybody win their first race, but I know how hard you've worked for so long, and your family works really hard at it. So it was cool, man. I was pumped for you. And then, you know, we'll move on to Springfield. As Scotty said, you're a hero, Charlotte, and a zero, so to speak. Not really, but Springfield, you know, you credited with 18th, and you had bike problems. Let's talk a bit about the Springfield main event and how that was going for you. You were the lone Harley up there in the lead draft against the Kawasaki's, and you were running it hard. But what happened to the engine?
You know, I believe the final outcome was a bearing drop in the cases, and it was definitely a tough break, and I believe we're the only Harley-Davidson in the main event. Oh, I'm sorry, Charlotte Canes was. But we're definitely running up front, giving them all we got, and we're definitely running where we should be on these tracks, and, you know, it's definitely a bad deal that the motor broke, but the entire team is working their butt off right now. I mean, I believe Dan Daffner's over at Carl Patrick's house right now putting the motor we broke at Springfield together to have another awesome bike for me to ride here at Del Mar, Delaware.
Brombo, do you watch the points week in and week out, or you just go in there and ride as hard as you can and take what you get? Because right now you're currently in the fourth spot. I think a good, you know, a couple of good finishes will put you up there in second. I don't know if you can catch up to Davis right now, but back to my original question, do you watch the point standings, and how important is that to you?
You know, it's pretty important to me, but I'd love to win the overall. I do check the points fairly often, just self-reminder that I'm doing good, I'm up there in the points, I'm where I need to be. But, you know, like I said, it'd be awesome to win, but Dave Fisher would have to have some bad luck, and I would have to have awesome luck. It's kind of hard to beat people with some of the best equipment out there. I mean, not knocking my team with their equipment, it's awesome. But, I mean, Davis's single program is really awesome, and he's going to be hard to beat at Calistoga.
Yeah, I mean, you're from California, and you know, you mentioned Calistoga, just got me thinking. You're from Salinas, that's where you grew up, and just recently your family, they made the move to Centralia, Illinois. How's that been going? Talk a little bit about that, and do you miss California at all? What do you like about Illinois?
You know, Illinois is awesome for centrally located for going racing. I mean, if I were to drive from California out to Delaware, I don't even want to think about how long of a drive it would be. I think my dad and I would end up killing each other or something. But it's pretty nice here. I mean, you actually haven't been to my house yet, but your sister and your stepbrother Briar has been here. So it's a pretty awesome house. Got a shop pretty much all to myself. You know, my dad and I work out of it. Do a lot of work to all of the motorcycles, cars, trucks, whatever we need to get done. So that's a really awesome feature about it. I mean, besides that, I really miss California. For one, I miss the Mexican food. It's just horrible here. And all my people back home, my friends. I mean, you've met Wesley and Jess. Those guys are awesome. So that's pretty much the only downfall. And the winter in California is definitely a lot warmer there. So we're going to test out how cold my feet get. But besides that, pretty even trade-off, I'd say.
Well, you said you got this great big shop for you and Barry to work out of, and you know, right now you're riding the twin for the next round that Dan Daffner has. So what kind of weekly tasks do you have to do? What do you do in the shop? You work on your singles program, or what kind of stuff goes on in your shop?
Mainly just messing around, to be honest with you, Scotty. I mean, when it comes to the singles, I do a lot of my own work on them. I check the valves myself, do all the oil changes, stuff like that. But when it comes to Harleys, I'm still getting my feet wet on working on them. I've actually been very lucky that I have James Hart, who my brother rides for, Hart Racing, right down the street from my house. So when it comes to working on Harleys, I take those there to his house, and we go over them together, and I'm learning, which is awesome. I mean, just learning about new motors and motorcycles is, I think, is really awesome. I'm kind of a gearhead myself, so love digging into those things and figuring out what makes them tick.
Well, besides working on bikes, you know, what else do you do during the week? I mean, you're technically still a kid. You know, you have a girlfriend, Alex, doesn't live far from you, and I'm sure you guys, you know, you do other stuff away from racing. What do you do during the week that doesn't involve motorcycles?
I fish, man. I fish like Dan. Oh, shoot, I forgot his name, but I fish like a fisherman. It's awesome. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
I mean, I ride my motorcycle. I mean, I guess that's still involved. Try and ride my bicycle when I can. But besides that, not too much. I mean, since I've moved here, it's been a lot of racing and working on motorcycles. And I try and go fishing as much as possible because it's, I think it's a great relaxation, just casting your bait out there and seeing what you can pick up.
So talk about how hard it was or how easy it was for you to go. You know, you pretty much grew up on the motocross style bikes, the 450s and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden you're on board a Harley Davidson. What was the biggest transition for you, and how hard was it for you to move to the big bike?
You know, the hardest thing for me was twisting my grip, man. I mean, it's those things are the cables on them are so damn long. It's just like, come on, you come out of the corner, you're starting to give it gas. You're like, oh no, there's still a half throttle more. But besides that, it was honestly fairly easy. I mean, last year I rode the Hart Racing Kawasaki 650, which is like a big Rotax, and I prefer the Harley actually a little more. It suits my riding style. I feed it a bunch of gas, and it just goes. It doesn't get all Western. So I definitely like the Harley better, but it was fairly easy to get used to it. I mean, Dan Daffner just pretty much gave me free rein on where I need to set my bars, the clutch, the brake levers, all of that, and it's been really awesome experience, that's for sure.
Well, we have Delaware this weekend. It's another clay half mile, and then followed by that, we have Calistoga coming up shortly after, and then we have the Las Vegas short track. What race are you looking forward to the most, you know, with the remaining three rounds? Do you favor the half miles now over the short track? You know, they're all different, too. I mean, you're going to be running the XR 750 at Delaware, the CRF 450 at Calistoga on the half mile, and then you go indoors and bang bars on the Las Vegas short track. I don't even know what that's going to be like. You know, I'm sure it's going to be a dirt, paperclip, bar banging indoor short track. What racetrack are you looking forward to the most on the rest of the schedule?
You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to choose. I kind of like Calistoga. It's okay with me. Del Mar, I'm definitely pretty excited about because, of course, it's a new race. It's a clay half mile, which I generally don't like all that much. I like shooting the big old roosters and getting Western on the cushion tracks, but I'm really hoping the indoor short track in Vegas is a lot like Springfield short track where it's hooked up, going fast, bar banging action. And hopefully we get a good crowd out there that way they can see what we're all about. So I'm going to have to lean towards the Vegas short track. I mean, I like getting into people and getting rough. I'm just kidding about that. But I definitely like the short tracks a little better. I mean, I like getting low sideways and hanging out there, you know. I mean, I've kind of grown to be more of a short track and TT rider than a half mile and mile rider, I believe. But, I mean, I'm coming around to all of them, I think, and I'm going to have to lean towards Vegas for sure.
Sounds good. So let's talk about some of the tracks that you've been to in the past, and do you have a favorite racetrack, and which one is it, and why? And it doesn't have to be on the Grand National Circuit.
You know, it's kind of hard to choose between Willow Springs, which is coming up the week right after Calistoga, and Peoria TT. I mean, I grew up riding Willow since I was just a little tyke on a 65, and I've raced Peoria three times now. I've been on the podium twice there, and I like hitting the big jumps wide open, you know, so getting the big booters, as the motocrossers would say. But Willow's definitely a fun track. Get to shoot some roosters, and those are my two favorite. I can't pick between them. It's like your children. Once you have two, it's all game over with.
Well, you talk about Peoria, man, and there's been a lot of debate over the past couple months and even years on whether or not the jump is too dangerous or if it's too big. Talk a little bit about that, and what are your thoughts on the jump?
You know, I love the jump. Yeah, for some people that are not too much of motocrossers or trail riders, the jump is dangerous for them completely. I mean, last year I saw some footage of a guy getting pretty buck nasty coming over and landing. And, I mean, even some of the experts, I saw Brad Baker do it. And it is dangerous, but you just got to know what you're doing and have control over it, basically. So, I mean, you look at Jake Johnson and Dustin Crow, they're launching it first practice 140 feet as far as they can. I feel sorry for the bikes when they land, but, I mean, it's definitely an awesome feeling flying over it and then flying straight into the right-hander.
Well, Bronson, we appreciate you coming on the show, and I got a deal for you. If you ever decide to step away from motorcycle racing, you can be a color commentator and come in the booth with me. How's that?
That'd be awesome, Scotty. That's an honor, man.
Well, we would have a blast. I tell you what, we'd definitely have fun with your terminology and your sense of humor. I think we'd have a good time in there.
Yeah, that definitely would be fun. Maybe you, me, and Chris can just sit back and watch some races and commentate. I mean, I don't have the awesome voice like you, but I mean, I ramble a lot, so.
Well, you're entertaining, and that's why we brought you on the show. And once again, congratulations on your win at Charlotte, and sorry about your luck there at Springfield. Maybe you can carry some momentum into the Del Mar Delaware race this weekend.
Hey, man, it's racing. Stuff like that happens, so just got to get a grip of it and get the bikes ready, and you'll see me in Del Mar Delaware. Hopefully going to the front. I mean, maybe to the back, maybe back up the front. You never know which way we're going to go, but we'll be going somewhere there, that's for sure.
Well, thanks again, dude, for coming on. I, you know, when I wasn't racing there, anytime I'd watch the Fans Choice and they'd give you they would bring the camera over your way. I would tell Amber, yo, get over here and watch Bronson. He's gonna crack us up, and you never let us down, man. So keep being you, buddy, and good luck this weekend. I'll see you in a couple days.
Sounds good, guys. I'll see you all out the track, and safe travels to you guys.
All right, sounds good. Thanks a lot, Bronson. We'll keep your eyes on the 30Z. Bronson Bauman stopping by the Flat Track Weekly Radio Show. We're going to take a commercial break. We come back. We're going to have some closing thoughts. We'll be right back. Evans Wireless Engine Coolant. Over the last 20 years, Evans Wireless Coolants have been tested and proven by OEMs, racing teams, and automotive aficionados to increase reliability and reduce operating costs. The operating temperature of an engine is very close to the boiling point of water. Hot spots within the cooling system can lead to localized boiling, generating steam which increases system pressure and prevents effective cooling. Evans Wireless Coolants have a boiling point of over 375 degrees, far above the operating temperature of the engine. The high boiling point ensures that the coolant remains liquid at all times, enabling consistently effective cooling. Eliminating water eliminates the problem of boil over after boil over. Try some today in your race bike. For more information, log on to evanscooling.com or call 888-990-2665.
Well, Scotty, we got, four more days to the debut race at Del Mar. Really, really excited. I don't want to say stoked anymore. I think I've overdone it, but excited for the event. And it should be good, man. As Bronson said, he's excited. I think everybody is. It's going to be good. I watched some footage of the racetrack, and it looks really flat. You know, most of the clay banks half miles we race at are banked, and this one looks flat from the footage I've seen. I watched the World of Outlaws modified race, I think it was, I saw on YouTube. It was about a month ago, and looked fast but flat. And my grandpa, actually, he raced sprint cars there a while back, and he pretty much had the same thoughts. You know, it's flat. It's during the day it gets real abrasive, and at nighttime there's quite a bit of grip to it, he said. So it should be good. It'll be any new racetrack is an equalizer, you know. I don't know if we've raced any new racetracks this year, actually. I think they've all been former venues, so this should be good.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it's going to be who can hook up to the track and get it dialed in the fastest. You know, I know it's going to be a lot of people are going to lean on the mechanics and their books from previous races. You mentioned tracks we haven't been to before, and most of you guys, and including me, have never been to Charlotte before, with the exception of maybe three or four guys. So Charlotte was kind of a new one, too, and the guys that have been there before were definitely faster
out
of the box. Yeah, they're up front. So it definitely helps to have notes to fall back on. So this one is going to be an equalizer. Obviously, there's going to be a track that everybody can compare it to. Look at the notes and set up your bike as fast as you can when you unload the bike and go from there.
Well, you only have, you know, 4-lap practice, 8 laps of qualifying. So anytime you have a new race bike or you're at a new venue or a combination of both, it's very, very difficult to get up to speed fast enough to be competitive with where you want to be. You know, it's, you know, I firsthand, at Charlotte, I went to a new racetrack on a brand new motorcycle I've never raced before. And you're trying to figure out the racetrack. You're trying to figure out your own bike. You're trying to get gearing figured out. You're trying to get your suspension figured out. There's just so many variables. And part of flat track and being successful on that day is coming to the track with your guns loaded, man. I mean, you can't waste a practice session. You got to be dialed in when you show up so you can be competitive right out the box. You can't afford to start off slow. You got to be up front right away, I feel. I mean, that's from my experiences. You can't go out there and qualify 40th and dig yourself out of a hole. It's possible. I mean, I've done it before, but it's not easy and it's not fun. You know, you go out there and you qualify good right away, it makes the day that much easier.
Do you think we should go to, like, some other sporting venues and go, like, you know, practice qualify the day before and then just race on the next day, you know, like on the Saturday or the Sunday? Or do you like the one-day event?
I mean,
event?
I don't know. I mean, I road race and it was 2-day, I think. I don't think it was 3. No, I think it was 2. I think it was a 2-day event. And I don't know. I mean, where we're at right now, it's kind of hard to hold spectator interest for that long. And, you know, renting the track for 2 days, it would be an added expense for promoter. And I don't think 2 days would work with where our sport's at right now. But I don't necessarily like the 8-lap qualifying. I mean, that's just part of the sport, I guess. It's what it makes it unique, but it's so hard to get dialed in 8 laps, especially at a new track. I mean, we're doing four lap practice and 8 laps of qualifying. You know, 4 laps of practice, that's nothing. You know, it's so hard to get your bike dialed in on a new racetrack in 4 laps, and especially when these racetracks are only, I don't know, what, 18 to 25 second lap times? I could be wrong. I mean, yeah, it goes by fast. So, but yeah, it makes our sport unique, and it helps having a good team behind you. You look at the guys, Jared Meese, Brian Smith, Zanotti, they all have, you know, 10 crew teams, and it makes things a lot easier on them. You know, for me, it was me, my grandfather, who kind of just, you know, carries a starter, helps us out when we need it. And then I had one mechanic, and he was running around like crazy just trying to get everything dialed in. And I think it helps having a large crew there, especially at new venues, to get the bike dialed in. And then you as a rider don't have to stress out and worry about it. So that's kind of the main reason I'm going to the media day this week. You know, it's technically not supposed to be used as a test and tune, but who are we kidding? You know, I'm going to go and try and get my gearing dialed out, get a good feel for the track. And while I'm there, I'll promote the race a little bit. But no, it's tricky anytime you go to a new venue, for sure.
Absolutely. Do you think you would like it better if we had, say, 2 practice sessions and then everybody went out one at a time for, you know, qualifying like they used to back in the day? Or would you like our format now better?
I mean, we did that at the X Games, and it was different, and it wasn't bad. But the 1-lap qualifier, that's, you can't get a good judge on who is actually fast just from 1 lap. You could go out there, you could make 1 mistake, and totally, you know, the fastest guy could qualify 30th. And I don't like that either. I think the way they have it now is okay. It'd be nice if they could, you know, we have a 3-hour gap in between the practice and qualifying. I don't see why we can't do 2 6-lap practices and then 2 6-lap qualifiers, you know, make it 24 laps, you know, give us some more seat time. We have so much time we dedicate to the fans, you know, and everything else, which is great, you know, but I think we could utilize that for more track time, get used to the racetrack, and, you know, in return, it might make things safer for the riders. They know the racetrack more. They're not going into it without knowing what's going on. I mean, we're going, you know, when the light goes green, we're wide open right away. I mean, to be competitive in the top 10, top 15 guys, you have to race hard from the green light. You know, that's something I learned over the years. The green light dropped, I'd get settled in, you know, blah, blah, blah. By the time I'd actually be up to speed, the leaders would be gone, you know. So I think if we knew the racetrack better, it would make it better racing, make it safer. And, you know, I don't know, Scott, that's just, I may be biased because I'm a rider and I want to ride more, but I don't see why we couldn't utilize some of the extra time we have to getting more familiar with the racetracks.
Well, I just, from my point of view nowadays, it's completely different than it is as a rider. And I think if we're at the racetrack way too long, you know, I know a lot of people don't come to watch practice, but the people that get there to watch practice, they're there for like 7 or 8 hours. And that makes for a long, long day. You know, the crews and the riders and us, you know, media people, we're there that long, but that's part of it. But I think if we could shorten that up somehow, and you know, if we even if we gave you guys more laps, but you know, scoot the practice and qualifying program a little bit closer to the race program, so we can not have that long of a break, and then, you know, open up the pit area afterwards for everybody to come down and meet the riders. You know, most people do that anyway. So I do like that we're friendly to our spectators. You know, where we can, you know, they can come to meet the riders up close and personal. And that's different than a lot of the, you know, other professional athletes. And I just feel like we need to shorten it up some and make it, you know, not seem like an all-day event.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, the night program, it seems like they have that pretty well under control, and it seems to be successful, but we struggle a little bit with the qualifying into the open paddock. And, you know, it can be very boring to sit around and do nothing for that long. You know, it's just something I got to figure out, and I think it's getting better over the years, but there's still room for improvement to make it a better show. And a lot of it, I guess, is up to the promoters. I mean, technically the AMA kind of just they let the promoters, they sell the race to the promoter, and then the promoter I think is in charge of all that stuff. But it's I'm not going to get into all that. I have a lot of different, you know, marketing plans and business plans I feel could help the sport, but it's not my place, I guess, to share those at this time. But there's a lot of room for improvement, and, you know, if something's not broke, don't try and fix it. But there's definitely a lot of room for improvement in our sport, and hopefully it gets there, Scotty. I mean, last year everything seemed to be going in an upward trend, and I was super excited and took a lot of pride in the sport and in the series I raced in. And I hate to say it, but slowly, you know, this year there's been a lot of hiccups throughout the series, and it just bummed me out as a rider and someone in the media. You know, I'm a journalist for Cycle World, and I race, and I just, I don't know. It seems like they kind of have been slacking lately, so hopefully they can get their stuff together, and we can keep growing this. Right now it's a good time. You know, the sport's growing with the X Games and the Troy Bayless Classic. Mark Marquez has shown a lot of interest. Valentino Rossi, Chad Reed's shown a lot of interest in the sport. Now's the time to jump. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are here right now. The characters are all in place. We just need to work together and make it happen. I don't know.
So
hopefully I didn't piss anybody off there.
There's your campaign speech for Corey Texter for president, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man, no way. I like racing too much right now. I thought about it. I would, you know, earlier in the year I would have said, yeah, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know, working for the series or being more involved with the suit and tie and, you know, not wearing a steel shoe anymore. But I really like my new race bike. I'm really having fun racing right now, and I want to keep racing for a while. I think we can be pretty damn competitive here next year. We get our shit figured out. But no, I love the sport, man. It's all I focus my time on. So it's something you think about. You know, this is my job. A lot of people, it's a hobby. You know, they do it for fun, but some of us, we try and make a career out of this, whether it's on the bike or off the bike, and just, I want to take pride in what I'm doing and with the series I race in, so that's just how I feel.
Sounds good. Well, that's about all I got for the show. I will see everybody in Delaware. If you can't join us in Del Mar, Delaware, tune in to fanschoice.tv. Thanks to all of our sponsors and thanks to all of our fans. Catch us on iTunes because you can listen to our podcast wherever you are. So we appreciate all of our followers on Instagram and on Facebook. That's all I got, Corey. I'll see you Saturday morning.
Peace out, guys.